Hi, I'm Luis. Please hold your applause for the real guy who deserves it, and that's our speaker tonight. I'm very happy to introduce Richard.
I'm Richard, a recovering member of Al-Anon family groups. I spent most of my life trying to find the people that liked me. When I was 25, there was this beautiful woman. She was 21 and she was afraid she was going to become an old maid. So she asked me to marry her. Well, I thought she'd like me better if I married her, so I accepted her proposal. And there was still something missing in my life, and I thought, well, if I can't find the people, I'll raise them. So we had three kids. Not all at the same time, but... And I thought maybe it was where I lived. You know, I lived in this little village. I moved to the county seat to the next county. I moved 20 times in 30 years. Anyway, I couldn't find the location or the people. And I was living in a bedroom community between Washington and Baltimore, a place called Linthicum Heights on Sycamore Road. Boy, that ought to do it, don't you think? Had a nice house and everything. Was active in the church and the PTA and all that stuff. But I still felt uncomfortable and I didn't want to be there. So I discovered, as I think back on it, I found a job where I fly out on Monday and fly back on Friday. And we partied a lot on the weekends. I remember on the radio, this is a while back. that everybody should have a designated driver. So I thought, well, I'll do that. I couldn't keep up with the rest of their drinking anyhow, so I won't drink anything. And I sat there feeling sorry for myself and blaming them. Now, I never told them what a wonderful person I was doing and what I was doing for them. I just did it. And then I had a resentment against them for my own actions. One of the things that I've learned in Al-Anon is that anyone with whom I'm uncomfortable, it's fair to tell them really genuinely how I feel as best I can do it. And I try to keep it to three words if possible, no more than two sentences, and only once. Because if I go beyond that, I'm starting to blame them for the way I feel. And, you know, nobody can hurt my feelings without my permission. And that's a little hard for me to take, too. But anyhow, I came back home from one business trip to Richmond, Virginia, and to that house on Sycamore Road. And my wife's car was gone. I went inside and there wasn't any furniture or any children. And it didn't take me, it was about 10 years ago before I could really put a name on it. What she did was stole my furniture and kidnapped my children. Talk about denial. I figured that she wasn't going to hurt them physically, and any psychological thing, I couldn't keep her from away from the children anyway. But I found her in about 2 weeks. And on that trip to Richmond, God works in my life in strange ways. And I really had to keep my eyes open. It's a little like the guy that he asked God, what should I do? And he went out and he said, push on that rock. I got out and pushed on that rock. Didn't move. Next day, he asked God what we're supposed to do, and he said, go out and push on that rock. And he kept that up for 3 months, and that rock didn't move. But what the guy didn't realize was he'd built up great big muscles in his arms, and he had a nice tan. It's just so strange. You know, I misconstrue. My ideas aren't necessarily the best ideas. And God is always there for me. And he always answers my prayers. And I think that's so wonderful. Sometimes he says yes. Sometimes he says not right now. And sometimes he says, I've got something better for you. Always answers my prayers. But anyhow, God working in my life. You talk about a power greater than yourself. I worked for Control Data, and it was my department was anyhow. I had the biggest sale the company had ever had, and they gave me a promotion to Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Anyway, and I started making more money than I ever did before in my life. It started piling up my checking account. I haven't had that problem before or since, as a matter of fact. But anyway, and things were going along fine. And then IBM bought my division from Control Data. And they said, well, we'll send you back to the Washington, D.C. area. We'll cut your pay in half. But we'll pay for you to go back down there. And I thought, well, they'll like me better if I do that. So I did. One of the things that you folks taught me and that I'm so grateful for is that I have choices. You know, I could have gone to work for a competitor. I was well known in the industry I was in Philadelphia. I could have gone to work for some of my customers. If that had happened, I'd probably still be in Philadelphia, still making a lot of money. In Philadelphia, my office was on the 33rd floor of 5 Penn Center Plaza, right down by City Hall. And I lived in New Jersey like you're supposed to, and I took the train back and forth. I kept it, you know, I always had my nose in the paper. I had a secretary that sat right outside my door in the inner office. And nobody came in that I didn't want to come in. And at the end of the day, I would take the train, I'd get another paper, take the train, go back over New Jersey, go to my house with all that wonderful new furniture. Close those new drapes, unplug the telephone, and hope nobody came to the door. I was a great isolator, and I didn't even recognize it. But anyhow, I ended up back in Washington, D.C. I thought, well, maybe if I'm around people, powerful people, maybe that'll do it. It'll rub off vicariously. So I found an apartment on Embassy Row near DuPont Circle. And my new drinking buddies were about 4 blocks toward the White House and where I live. And my new drinking buddies were some of the most powerful people in the world. Some of them run into trouble. Some of you older people might remember something about a merry-go-round. And some of them have been in jail since then. But anyway, the power thing didn't work either. And then I got the opportunity, an opportunity because an organization, it was a major convention was moving from Dallas to Las Vegas. And a friend of mine in Washington was putting together a temporary agency to take care of the people that they needed for guards and for security and for models and entertainment. And I thought, well, maybe I can entertain myself into feeling good about myself. I went to Las Vegas, and of course the party never stopped. We just changed the people every 4 days. You know, new convention had come into town. And I But I had to get out of there. I couldn't help enough people, you know. I used up most of the money that I'd made in Philadelphia on stuff, you know. They say in Al-Anon, keep your ducks in a row. Well, I tried to do that, and about half of the ducks weren't even mine. Anyway, I had a charge account with a bail bondsman, and I never got arrested. Well, anyhow, God works strange. I was working part-time for a man in Las Vegas, and he called up and he said, Richard, I just bought a business in Silver Lake. And I said, well, where's that? He said, well, it's part of Los Angeles. I said, okay. I said, I'll do it. He wanted me to go and run this business that he bought and to hire some people to do it. And God working again. I borrowed $1,000. I broke. And I put my old Mazda into the truck. All I could get was a great big truck. So I just went to a loading ramp and loaded the car on the back because I didn't have anybody that I could really felt comfortable with that could drive the car and make arrangements. But anyhow, I got to Silver Lake, and my office was right on Sunset Boulevard. And I then took on Sunset Boulevard as my project. And that's a lot of work. I remember once I had big plate glass windows in the front of my office, and I could look out on it on Sunset Boulevard. And I looked at the sidewalk on the other side of the street, and here was this man running naked up the street. Two police officers right behind him. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do about this? It's a real job. But anyhow, I found a local bar where I felt comfortable, and I went in, and everybody in there knew me. And it was just gorgeous. I could look around a big crowd like this. I don't want to hurt anybody. Yeah, I guess it's going to be okay. Anyway, there was this beautiful lady sitting on a stool up at the bar. And everybody in there knew her, and everybody knew me, and they introduced us. So we sat there and chatted for a couple of minutes, and she rolled up her sleeve and showed me a bruise, and she says, the guy I'm staying with beat me up last night. I don't know where I'm going to sleep tonight. Well, when she woke up in the morning, she didn't know who I was or where she was. Again, it was a situation. I sure didn't know she was blacked out, but she was. And she came back to me 3 times. And I felt wonderful. What I forgot about was the 2 times she left me and how terrible I felt every time she left. Again, I was expecting different results. And they were the same. The last time she came back to me, she decided that if we lived together, we could get her to stop drinking. And it worked for about 45 days. And then she took a bunch of pills and drank 2 bottles or 3 bottles of champagne and almost died. I took her over to the hospital. And she spent 4 days in intensive care and another 7 weeks in recuperation and in the dry out area for that hospital. And I think it was her psychiatrist suggested that I look up Al-Anon family groups. And I said, well, what's that? He said, well, it's for an organization of people who have been affected by someone else's drinking. I thought, well, I certainly qualify there. I'll tell them what I know about getting them sober, and they'll fill in the cracks, and we'll have Donna Beck dress in hair so she can pay her half the rent like she promised. Yeah. And of course, and incidentally, this is a good place to plug Al-Anon. You know, we're not a secret society. The anonymous part has to do with the membership roles. Our World Service Office has had a strategic plan for a decade. And the motto goes to tell everyone everywhere about Al-Anon. We don't need to make sure they get it, but we want to make sure they know it's here. Let's see, where was I? Oh, yes. Just coming out of the hospital. And so I thought, well, I'll give this Al-Anon thing a try. And I went in, and here's this whole bunch of people. It was over at the Windsor Club. And some of our friends over there, Willie, you know. And the first step, of course, just didn't fit into my plans at all. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. Well, I wouldn't buy a used car from somebody that's powerless and unmanageable. And here's all these people. And you know, that's one thing about our program. I think it's been a very gentle program for me. But I don't know yet how to feel better before I feel worse. I mean, it's just part of the process. You know, the first two steps, you know, powerless, unmanageable, and insane, you know. It's all in there. But I've discovered, at least for me, it was important for me to get a clear picture of that. My sponsor, we went carefully over the first two steps. And then step three is where we make a decision. And that was brought home to me. I'd been in Al-Anon about 6 months, and this one woman, she told us that she shared with us that she's still living with her husband, who is still drinking. But she always seemed to have it so together. She felt good about herself. And I said, how do you do that, Dorothy? He said, well, Richard, you decide to. I said, it couldn't be that simple. She said, it's simple, but it isn't easy. And then my sponsor helped me with a third step. He said, he told me a little story. He said, there's three frogs sitting on a log. And one of them decided to jump off. How many frogs are on the log? A trick question. I says, two. He says, no, there's three on there. The third one's just decided to jump. He hasn't jumped yet. See, the jumping takes place in steps 4 through 9. The decision, in fact, I was going to throw step three out. I didn't see any reason for it anyhow. But it would save us all a lot of effort. We, you know, 11 steps is easier to do. But anyway, now it's so important to me to remember to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to care of God. Step two is really interesting. You know, there's a lot of folks that have different ideas about organized religion. And step two doesn't say anything about religion or God, does it? What does it say? came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. If I can't do it, it's got to be a power greater than me. That makes sense. But it's important for me to get that in my mind. And after Dorothy gave me that little talk, it became much clearer to me that this business about getting somebody to like you, it isn't from the outside in, it's from the inside out. And if I decide to feel better about myself, the rest of it's going to happen. And so I made that my full-time job for the last 27 and a half years, is to love myself with God's help. And I do that on a regular basis, and the only time I can do anything about it is for the next 10 minutes. Because I used to feel terrible about what did happen, worry about what's going to happen, and the next day I'd feel terrible about what did happen, worry about what's going to happen. I treat life like this was a dress rehearsal or something. This is a real thing. And some of the people I sponsor, I say, well, here's a suggestion that worked pretty well for me. And he said, well, I'll have to try that sometime. Well, anyway, the next 10 minutes is all I've got, you see, to do anything. And so let's see, where are we here? So step four is it's a little bit rough sometimes to make, you know, to take a fearless, searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And what I forgot about with step four is that, you know, I've got some qualities that are pretty good. And I made a list of those too. Sure, there's lots of stuff I needed to work on, and it was important for me to get those straight in my head. Step five is, it's like this corral, and there's a committee of three people sitting up on the fence. And there's this person down in the center of the corral. Now, all those people on the fence want me to love myself and feel better. It's me, it's my sponsor, and it's God. And what we're doing is looking at that person as a third person. You know, it's so much easier if, when I'm talking about myself, if I look at it as somebody else, because I do a lot of things to me that I wouldn't do to my best friend. And since I've become my best friend, that's changed a little bit. So, incidentally, you may recognize that I believe the steps and the traditions are the way this whole program works, at least for me. And you know, serenity, we talk about the priceless gift of serenity. And it is a gift. I can't buy it. There was a philanthropist that wanted to give us $10,000 and the World Service Office turned him down. I mean, if he wants to come to a meeting and put a couple bucks in the seventh tradition, that's fine. But you can't buy Al-Anon. And I thought I could do it by doing a lot of neat things for other people. And that's okay, and maybe I'll feel better about myself, but I can't earn serenity. Sometimes I'll just wake up in the morning and I'll just really feel pretty good. And I realize that I've just received the gift of serenity. Somebody here, a good friend of mine, said, don't be offended if I go to sleep while you're talking. And I said, I take it as a real compliment. If somebody can go to sleep while they're listening to me, that's serenity. So I thought it was really neat of them. Anyway. Step six, there was another one that was on its way out when I was early on in the program. There's a lot of stuff wrong with step six. There's two absolutes in it. He came entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And I thought, I've got to get rid of my defects of character. Doesn't say anything at all about me getting rid of my defects of character. I just need to become entirely ready to have God do it. I can't do anything perfectly. I can't even screw up perfectly. Anyway, it's funny, when Bill was writing these, he came to step six. He only put about two or three sentences in the big book. And when he did his 12 and 12, he spent most of the time in there, read it sometime, explaining that none of us are beautiful. And in an AA meeting, you'll frequently hear the chapter five, which right after the steps comes a little saying, none of us are saints. Anyway, so you can keep step six. You don't need... It's a good way it's a good direction to go in, okay? And to remember that God removes the defects. Anyway. Step 7 is the shortest step. It's the only one that can get on that linoleum up there on one line. 7 words. Shortest reading in our 7 and 7. The hardest step for me to do. The humble thing, I had a problem with that. There was this religious order that a person was interviewing them, and they asked the member, what is there about your order that is so much better than the others? She thought a minute, and she said, serenity. We're much more serene. Much more humble is the word I was looking for. No wonder you didn't laugh. Anyhow, she said, humility. We're more humble than the other orders. Of course, it goes right out the window when you say, half the people I know used to be below average. I'd put everybody in their slot. And the ones that were below average, that was... I kind of looked down on those, and the ones that are above her, I thought, my God, I was jealous of them. But now we're all the same, as far as I'm concerned. We're all on the same path. We're maybe on a little different place, and we got a little different background. But everybody wants to feel good about themselves. And I don't know about you, but I'd a lot rather make friends with somebody who loves themselves than somebody that's always telling you what's wrong with the world and the government and the church and their spouse. It's okay. And especially for you newcomers, it's okay to share that. But I don't like step 1 a lot, so I try to get on down into the meat of the thing with 4 through 9. You want to get that. Okay, where are we here? Oh, we're humble now. Made a list of all people we had harmed and became willing to make a list of them all. There's those all words again, those absolute words. And I don't think I could ever do that. I mean, there's some people that I probably owe some amends at that I saw for 15 seconds on the freeway, And I have a hard time putting them on the list. I can put them on the list, but I can probably never find them again. And my sponsor had, I kind of fooled around with that list, and I put some people down, my former wife and my kids and some other people. And he said, you're missing somebody on the list. And I said, who? He said, me. Said yourself. See, that's the one person that I probably harmed the most. And I believe that my biggest responsibility in God's creation is to that part of it I can never leave. And that's me. That sounds kind of selfish. But to genuinely like myself, I need to be civil and even friendly with other people. I find that I gravitate toward other people who like themselves. That's one of the neat things I like about our fraternity here. There's, close to 200 people in this room that all are here because they want to feel better about themselves. At least I believe that. I know I'm one of them. Anyway, so that list is important. And my sponsor trimmed down my list. He said, you don't owe them any amends, this one and that one. And the list came down. And some of the people on that list I've never made amends to. But boy, it's so much different. I know I shouldn't cross talk, but Carl always tells a story about writing his stepfather and mailing it. And how things got so much better. And About 6 months later, he was talking to his mother, and she confided that stepfather had never seen the letter. The only thing that had really changed is Carl's opinion. Isn't that neat? I appreciate that, Carl. Anyway. So we do make direct demands, but we're even loud and out there. One of the people I don't want to injure is me. And I can do that, you know. I can get into a verbal fight. I'm not very good at physical stuff with somebody. When I really went there to make them amends, and we just drag up the old stuff, and it isn't helpful to anybody. So I try to avoid that. We can make direct amends. My sponsor always used to say, I would complain to him for a little while on the phone. He'd sit there, he'd say, every once in a while, let me know he was still awake. He'd let me go on and on. And when I finally make a little break in the conversation, he'd say, well, what step are you on, Richard? I said, but you don't understand. This is happening. She didn't listen to me. You know, all this time. I said, what step are you on, Richard? You know, and I'm always on, and incidentally, if you see my sponsor, tell him I'm on step 10. Okay. Continue to take personal inventory. We're now right out of the 4 through 9 area, and we're talking about a portion of the program that I tend to use more than the other parts. The first 9 steps have served me well for decades, but the last 3 steps are the ones that continue to sustain me. I continue to take personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it, or try to. And that's very important to me. And everything is fine as long as I feel good about myself. But if I start feeling uncomfortable about myself, I stop long enough to take personal inventory and see what I'm doing and why I feel uncomfortable. My feelings, some of them sure don't feel like it, but I believe they're all a gift of God, because some of those feelings have stirred me to change, to improve it. I don't like to change. And then when I decide I want to change, I keep praying to God for patience, and I want it right now. You know, the bummer in our program is it doesn't happen overnight. At least it didn't for me. I guess some people, that's fine. But it's important to be patient. And the person who hurries through the steps, in my opinion, is cheating only themselves. There was an AA convention with Al-Anon participation, and it had something to do with don't take yourself so seriously. And there was this little thing going around that said, check on Rule 62, I think it was. You'll find it on page 125 in the big book. Well, I happen to have a big book there, and I looked on page 125, I didn't see anything about Rule 26. See, it was a joke. There aren't any rules in Al-Anon or AA. No rules. But there's 24 suggestions on the plastic behind me here. And I've discovered that the closer I can work toward those ideas that have helped millions of people all over the world for the last 75 years, the better I feel. And the more likely I am to find, discover that I have just received the gift of serenity. You know, that we talk about, I don't know if it's the opening or the closing, we talk about that. We always mention the precious gift of serenity, and I'm usually finishing a conversation with somebody else or thinking about what I had for supper, some problem on my mind, and it just goes right over me. You know, our readings, if when I start taking them seriously and listen, I can gain so much from them. So anyhow, I think in a spiritual program, it's so strange that we get clear down to step 11 before we start talking about prayer and stuff like that. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for two things: knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Now, you know, it would be nice if it didn't rain on our Sunday school picnic. So I would have, in the old days, I would have prayed that God doesn't have it rain. Well, you see, that isn't one of the things that over which I can do much. If it's going to rain, it's going to rain. And that's one of God's rules. If it isn't going to rain, it doesn't rain. So that's not a choice. But I do have choices, and when I expand my thinking, I can take the picnic inside. I can stay out in the rain and have a good time out there. I can postpone it till next Saturday. That so much of the stuff that I tried to change is just unchangeable. Just plain unchangeable. I was going to my Sunday night meeting, and right before I left, I was listening to the news, and the weatherman said that the sun's going to set at 7:04. Well, I was heading west on Glen Oaks Boulevard at 7:03. And the sun was, it was a nice clear night. I looked up there, and there was the sun going down. I wondered, I wasn't sure how the weatherman knew that was going to happen. But of course, the reason he could is because if you were in that geographic position 1,000 years from now, the sun would be going down at 7:04. That wouldn't, probably 1,000 years from now, that probably won't be called Glen Oaks, and it probably won't be called Burbank. Who knows? I kind of like to stay around to see, but I probably won't make it 1,000 years. But there's some things that just don't change in God's world. One of the ways that I kind of bring myself down to this is when I get up in the morning and my feet hit the floor, I thank God for gravity. Now that sounds kind of dumb. But you know, I can't see it. I can feel it. I can depend on it absolutely. And there it is. God, it's been keeping me on this planet since before I was born. And so there are things in this world that are absolute. If you come to a stop sign and there's no cops around and nobody in the intersection, you can go sliding right through. Because there's a man-made rule that says you're going to pay $250 if you just slow down. However, if there's another vehicle in that intersection when you go through the stop sign, God's law says that no two solid objects can occupy the same spot at exactly the same time. And no matter how much I pray for it, God's rules are going to hang in there, see? So, which is a way to tell you how I kind of work around step 11. There's only two things I pray for today. Knowledge of God's will for me, and I'm getting a little better at that, and I can usually figure it out. But the hardest part of that step is the second thing I pray for, the power to carry it out. I sometimes got God's will pretty well figured out, but I don't want to do it. You know, the way I can do is just get quiet with myself. And I do take time every day to get quiet with myself and to observe how I'm doing and to thank God for all the gifts he's given me. And that's the way it works. And I've got to stop talking pretty soon. It's a good thing we're on step 12. I've got to quit here pretty quick because we got to be out here at 8:30. Okay. The 12th step sounds like a graduation speech, doesn't it? After experience, it taught me. But the occurrence... I'm doing Spinoza. Excuse me. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Sounds like it. We try to carry this message to others and practice the principles of all our affairs. Well, I have and am experiencing a spiritual awakening. Thanks to you and thousands and millions of people who have been in Al-Anon before us, because that's where our entire program comes from. So the spiritual awakening thing is good. The second part, you newcomers, we're so grateful that you're here. And we hope you make this one of your regular meetings. This has been a powerful meeting for many, many years. I used to attend it about 25 years ago when there were 8 of us. Jack and I were there and maybe a half a dozen other people. The little room over here that isn't even there anymore. But look what it's grown to. And everybody is here because they want to feel better about themselves. At least I believe that. Anyway, so we try to carry the message to others. And again, if my girlfriend's psychologist or psychiatrist hadn't told me about Al-Anon family groups, I wouldn't be here tonight. And I wouldn't be feeling as good as I do about myself. I found that secret. So remember that. Tell the professionals, the helping professional people that you may know about Al-Anon. If you want to keep your own anonymity, you can tell them you have a friend who has benefited greatly from Al-Anon family groups. And this is a true statement because I'm your friend. And I have benefited greatly from Al-Anon. Now, the real joke in step 12 is the last part. Practice these principles in all our affairs. And what that says to me is, Richard, go back and do it all over again. So when I woke up this morning, and I thank God for gravity, I decided to feel good about myself. And I'd just like to report that it's still working. Thank you very much.